So this is a situation. This is just a small anecdote to illustrate. But that is the situation the world is in. Everywhere, everyone wants it. Everyone is searching for it. But somehow, there is some prick of dissatisfaction that comes in the search. So before we start, we need to understand what is the meaning of peace. What does the dictionary say? The dictionary explains that peace means being undisturbed, absolutely without any anxiety, and of complete mental tranquility or being calm. Actually, peace is a very, very broad subject. But one thing we need to understand is that peace is synonymous with happiness. Peace and happiness go hand in hand. Right? Do you agree? One cannot be happy and not be peaceful. And one cannot be peaceful and not be happy. But let us just examine what is the current situation of the world with regard to peace. Yeah. Every morning when we get up and we see the newspaper, 99% of the news is bad news. Is there terrorism? There's war? There's conflict? There's greed? Suicide? Srila Prabhupada used to explain that actually when the First World War took place, yeah, you've all heard of the First World War, right? There was so much bloodshed, so much destruction. So everybody was like so tired. They said, we don't want any wars. So let's form the League of Nations, you know, so that there will be no more wars. But did that happen? No. We had the Second World War. Yeah? And the Second World War was called as a war that ended all other wars. Is that true? They formed the United Nations after that. But did all the wars end? No. Practically every day there is some war happening somewhere. Yeah? This war, that war. So the current situation is that we have not been able to find a solution for these wars or these conflicts. So what we need to understand is basically that what we see in the world around us is actually that this world is made up of people, right? It is made up of individuals. So what you see, the condition of the world, is actually an expression of what is in people's minds. Correct? What you see around you is what is actually there around in each and every person. So what is the general thinking that each and every person has? Most people think that, oh, if I have this much wealth, then I'll be peaceful. Yeah, you've heard of this? Yeah? If I have so much wealth, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be peaceful. Yeah? If I have this degree, then I'll be peaceful. If I just have a car, then I'll be happy. I'll be peaceful. No more anxiety. Yes? You've heard this? This is very common. Because this is the understanding that most people think that only if I had this, that is the end of all my desires, all my needs. But if that is true, then why do we hear of multi-millionaires jumping from skyscrapers and committing suicide? Have you heard of this? Yeah, multi-millionaire jumps from a skyscraper, dies. Yeah? And if that is true, then why is the WHO, the World Health Organization, what it says? It says that the biggest this disease that will be there in this generation would be mental illness or depression. Huh? And we are not talking of some poor countries who don't have any wealth. We are talking of in the richest countries of the world. They have enough money. They have enough wealth. Then what is it that is lacking? If they were so happy and peaceful just because of their wealth, then why would they go in for this? Yeah? And most of you are students. Yeah? Some of you would be thinking that, oh, if only I have this degree, then I'll have a nice job and then I'll be peaceful. Yeah? I should just get the top. I'll get into a very nice job, yeah, and then I'll be very happy, yeah. You must be having so many friends also who are just early 20s. I know so many youngsters who are just in their early 20s and they're earning like anything, yes. They're earning like anything, which even their fathers and grandfathers would have not earned in their whole life, but they're earning. So does that mean that they are peaceful and happy? Then why is it that there is the rates of suicide, the rates of drug addiction, the rates of, you know, juvenile delinquency, all increasing so much? And even if one climbs up, becomes very successful in his job and is very top placed, are they happy? Are they peaceful? No. There is so much insecurity. Oh, when will I lose what I have? So when there is so much anxiety, so much fear, how can there be peace? How can there be happiness? And some may say, oh, I don't want all this. Maybe I'll just be peaceful and happy with my family life. Earlier, we used to quote statistics from US. But now, our own city, Mumbai, is very fast catching up. Recent studies, they show that 66% of marriages in Mumbai end up in divorce within the first 5 years of marriage. Tremendous figure. Yeah? So this is the status. So where is the peace? And there are so many peace organizations all over the world trying to put in their best to somehow or the other get peace on this planet. The United Nations, they have peace summits. There are the biggest thinkers in the world. Everyone comes and they gather, and for days together they're discussing how there should be non-violence, how there should be peace everywhere. But the irony of the situation is that if we had to ask any of those delegates, sir, what did you have for your lunch today at the summit? Guess what would be the answer? They would have actually eaten a dead corpse of another helpless living being. Yes? Isn't that ridiculous? We are talking of peace, but we are just exploiting some other species. Does peace just mean peace for human beings? Yeah? We hear of cricket matches for peace. We hear of musical orchestra for peace. Do you think peace is so simple? Do you think these things can achieve this thing called as peace? So it doesn't take much for all of us or for me to convince you that actually there is no so-called peace which everybody is talking of in this world. So all that everybody is trying is not making much of a difference. Maybe some difference here and there, but not a significant difference. So there is a very nice analogy. So what do we do now? How do we correct the situation? So there's a very nice analogy which I would like you to think about. Is that if you buy a nice TV, a television set. Yes? If you buy some very reputed company's television set, some Sony or Panasonic or something like that, and you get it home and you start, you know, seeing on the television. At some point of time, there is some disturbance. There's no clarity in the television. It's all fuzzy. It's hazy. Yeah? What would you do? What would you do? One option is that I start turning the knobs. Yeah? I turn this knob. Maybe now it will be clear. No, maybe I should turn this knob. Maybe now it will be clear. Yeah? I turn this knob and that knob and nothing is working. I just turn knob after knob after knob, but there's no difference. And then I start speculating. Oh, probably the TV has become too hot. So maybe I should just pour a little cold water on it. Will it work? It's crazy. It'll be crazy. You'll spoil the whole thing. Right? But what is the other solution? The other solution is that when I brought the television set, I have a manual, right? The television set gives a manual. How do you use this television set, correct? Everyone knows about a manual? Yes. So who writes that manual? The person who's created the television set, right? And he gives everything. What does it contain? What you're supposed to do? If you have this disturbance, why you are having this disturbance? Yeah? How you should correct it? Right? So it's very simple. I just look at the manual and I do the corrections. Right? So I have two options. One option is just think and speculate and turn this knob and that knob. Or I just turn the manual and just look at the instructions and just follow it. Yeah? Why? Because a person who's created it is saying that if this is what is missing, if this is what is disturbing, then this is a way how to correct it. Right? So any intelligent, sane person should actually just follow that manual. Do you all agree? Yes? Do you think, or anyone thinks that solution one is the ideal solution? Anyone? So, if we have to see the situation of the world today, in our own lives, and the lives of people around us, and the whole world, what is happening is just trying out solution one. Probably this will bring peace. Turn this knob. Probably that will bring peace. Turn this. Yeah? So that is what we are doing. But it's not leading to any end result. So what do we do? Why we have gathered today is to understand what is solution two. Right? If something doesn't work, don't we look for an alternative? Or we'll continue fidgeting with that? No. Any intelligent person will always look out. No, there must be something else. So why we have gathered today is to understand what is that solution two? And what we are going to discuss is that solution two, which is from the manual. Yeah? And this manual, what we are referring to, is the scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah? Just like the TV manual was written by a person who has created the TV, when the Lord has created this universe, He has also given a manual. Right? Does that make sense? So this manual explains what is it? How are you supposed to use it? If there is something wrong, what do you do? Yeah? Two things. Why is this something wrong happening? Why is there a problem? And second, how to correct it? Right? So what we are doing today is going to discuss that this very aspect that is missing in most people's lives all over the world, that is peace, the Lord is explaining why there is a problem and how you can correct it. Yes? So what is the first thing? Why is the peace missing? What is the problem? So it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that there cannot be real peace without knowledge. And what is the beginning of knowledge? The beginning of knowledge is to understand, who am I? Who are we? So Bhagavad Gita explains, who are we? We are not this body. We are not this body. This is the first understanding. We are the spirit soul or the Atma. The soul, that is me, is residing in this body. Right? It has taken up a body. It's living in this body. That is why this body is a living body. And the minute this soul leaves this body is a dead body. Right? This is the basic understanding. We are not this body. We are the spirit soul. But the problem with all of us everywhere is that we are thinking, I am this body. That is the reason we are thinking, I am man, I am woman, I am an Indian, I am an American, I am a Hindu, I am a Muslim, right? Where does it stem from? Because we are thinking we are this body, right? Just like if a person is wearing a coat, yeah, the person and the coat are different, correct? Do you agree? Yeah? So similarly, we are the spirit soul and we have taken up this body. But that doesn't mean we are this body. But the whole world is basically working on this concept that I am this body. So immediately what do you say? I am this body. So everything that is related to this body is mine. This is my wealth. This is my house. This is my property. This is my relatives. This is my nation. Right? And we consider it as reality to such an extent that our whole lives, practically the entire lives of so many individuals, practically all over the world, is just based on this. And then automatically what comes? My nation is better than your nation. Why? Because it is mine. My religion is better than your religion. Why? Because it is mine. My caste is better than yours. Why? Because it belongs to me. I am involved. Correct? So everything is centered on I and mine. But isn't that I and mine on a defective basis? Correct? We are still thinking that I am this body. So each one's life, you can imagine, is just centered around I and mine. Yeah? So we can just do a small experiment to understand how there will be so much conflict and confusion if everyone is thinking like that. Just imagine we are a very small group, so we can all imagine we went for a picnic. Yes? Everyone is with me? We go for a picnic to a very nice scenic place. There's a beautiful forest, and in the middle of the forest, there is a very nice, beautiful, clear pond. Yeah, very nice, still pond. And we all sit around that pond, yeah, and we start our experiment. So first part of the experiment is that each of you will be given one pebble each. Okay? Yes? And now the thing is that each of us, one by one, will throw the pebble in our hands at a fixed point in the pond. Yes? So each of us do that. What happens? What will happen when you throw a pebble, but everyone is throwing at the same point? What will happen? Sorry? Yeah, there will be circles. There will be ripples in the water, but they will be all a very beautiful concentric circle. Yeah? One circle, another circle, another circle. Yes? Okay. Now the second part is that each of us is given a pebble and each of us are told to throw it at different points. Okay? So each of us start throwing one here, one there, one here. So what would happen to the water? Yes? Any volunteers? What would happen to the water? Yes, there will be chaos in the water because ripples of one pebble will clash with another pebble. Correct? And there will be throughout. There will be so much of turbulence in the water. Correct? So this is what is very, very much like the situation in the world today. Yeah? Because each of us is thinking, I and mine. So our circles, our interest is going to clash with another person who is thinking, I and mine. Yes? So obviously, there are going to be conflicts. It is not surprising because each of us is centered on I and mine. So the manual, the Bhagavad Gita is explaining that this is the basic premise of understanding. This is the root cause of why there is no peace. Is that convincing enough? Yes? So Bhagavad Gita doesn't stop at that. It also gives, the creator is also giving what is the solution for the problem. How can we correct it? So, what is the solution? The solution is a 3-point peace formula. Shishirada Gopinath, Shri Gauranga. It's called as a 3-point peace formula. So, we will discuss this peace formula. So, I'll just recite the verse. And then all of you can repeat. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam nyatvamam shantim ruchati. So please repeat after me. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Suhridam, Sarvabhutanam, Jnatvamam, Shantim, Richati. The translation is that a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all the planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Yes? So here the Lord is explaining that how one can attain peace. So the formula is very simple. It comes to 3 points. And we'll discuss each of them very briefly. That once one understands that the Lord is a supreme proprietor and controller, plus the Lord is a supreme enjoyer, plus the Lord is a supreme well-wishing friend of all living entities, with this knowledge is equivalent to real peace. Yes? Is this formula clear? Yeah? So we'll discuss each of them. So the first thing is that the Lord is the supreme proprietor and the supreme controller. What does a proprietor mean? A proprietor of something is one who owns something, yeah? And it can never be taken away from him. It cannot be usurped by anyone else. And he owns it for all time to come. Not for some time and then he loses it. That is called as a real proprietor. That's the meaning of a proprietor. But actually, if you see, all of us want to be the proprietors, right? We say, this is mine. Yeah? All of us. Whether it may be a small object or it may be a large thing. But all of us, want to be the proprietors or the controllers of something. And when we don't have it or when we lose it, there is so much of conflict. Yeah? That is why there is war and so many things. But we need to understand that we are all thinking that we are the proprietors. But is that true? There is a very nice story which I heard from one of the devotees about Emperor Akbar. You've all heard of Emperor Akbar? Yes? One of the very, one of the most powerful emperors in India. And he, at one point of time, was very proud that he was a large and big emperor and he had huge, such a huge kingdom. So his minister, Birbal, detected that the emperor is very proud of what he has. So Birbal decided to teach him a lesson. So what did he do? One day, Emperor Akbar was strolling in his beautiful garden, was taking a walk. And as he was walking, he saw that there was an old fakir, a dirty, ragged fakir, sleeping on the way in his beautiful garden. So Akbar was very angry, very irritated. He said, "Who are you? Just get up. Just leave this place. Why are you sleeping here?" So fakir just opened his eyes and he said, "Why? I am sleeping on the land. What is your problem?" He said, "So no, you can't sleep here." So why? "Because it's my garden." Saying, "Oh, this is your garden?" He said, "Yes, this belongs to me. I'm Emperor Akbar. You can't sleep here." He said, "Acha." She said, "Let me ask you a question." He said, "Yes, tell me. Before you were born, who was having this garden? Who owned this garden?" He said, "My father." "Who was Akbar's father?" History students. "Humayun." That's nice. Thank you. So he said, "He owned this garden." He said, "Oh, and before him, my grandfather, he owned this garden." He said, "Oh, and my dear emperor, after you die, who will own this garden?" He said, "My son, of course." So the fakir started laughing. He was rolling on the ground and he was laughing and laughing and laughing. And Akbar just couldn't understand. He was like, "What's wrong? Why are you laughing like this?" The fakir said, "My dear emperor, I'm so sorry to say that you're so foolish." I said, why? He said, I thought you are the emperor. But now I realize that you are just living in a dharmashala, in a guest house. Yeah? Why? Because this is a place so many people have come and they have gone. And now you have come and you will go. So how can you say that this is yours? Right? Just because he owns that place of land for some time. But just like we all go to the guest house. You've all gone to some guest house. You occupy some room for some time. You say, this is my room. And then you have to leave the place. Correct? And someone else comes to that room. Correct? Then he says, this is my room. But that is the situation of the world. If you see, if you read our history, we hear of Alexander the Great. Yes, all of you have heard Alexander the Great. Why was he great? Because he conquered so much of the world. Yes? But where is he? Where is he? The world is still here. The land is still here. But where is Alexander? Huh? We all heard of Hitler. Yes? He ruled Germany and the World War took place and so many things. Correct? But Germany is still there. The world is still there. Where is Hitler? Where is Hitler? Yes? This is just a small example. We claim to be proprietors. We claim to be controllers. But that is not so. Forget about controlling or having power on anything else. Do we have any control even on our own body? Does any of you get up in the morning and set, okay, today the temperature of my body will be 98 degrees. Does any of you do that? I don't. Does anyone in this room do that? No. Does any of us get up in the morning and say, okay, today my heart will beat at, 72 beats per minute? Does anyone do that? Yes. Do we all get up and say, okay, today I will breathe at so many breaths, 16 breaths per minute? Do we do that? Does any of us do that? Is that running by our control? Forget about anything else. And even if it doesn't work properly, do you have any control? We don't. We may try some temporary measures to just set it as close to normal, but it doesn't. Right? And when old age comes, when disease comes, do we invite? Oh, old age, please come. Now I'm ready for you. Oh, disease, now you can come. We don't want disease, but it comes. We don't want death, but it comes. So what sort of controllers are we? But the Lord is the supreme proprietor. He's the supreme controller. He says, I am Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor and controller of everything that exists. Just like we see these things which are not happening with our control, even otherwise. Does any of us get up and tell the sun, or when you take rest, you tell the sun, Mr. Sun, you get up at this time tomorrow, you rise at this time. Do we do that? Are we telling the sun to set? Who is doing it? Are we telling that this will be the season? Yeah, now it should be winter. No. And one who is a real proprietor is not questionable by anyone. Correct? If you are the proprietor, if you are the controller, whatever you do, no one should question you. Correct? So that is only true with the Lord. We all staying in Bombay, right? We all were there during the July rains, that one day which rained heavily. Yes? Could any of us question the Lord? Excuse me, O Lord, how is it that today you have increased the rains? It's beyond question. Yeah? If it is too cold, we say, oh, excuse me, how can you do this? No. He's beyond question. He is the supreme proprietor. He is the supreme controller. That is why he explains, Maya Dakshena Prakriti, Suyate Sacharacharam. Moving, non-moving, everything is working. The whole material nature is working under my control. So he's the supreme controller. And what is the second part of the formula? Anyone? What is the second part? One was the Lord is the supreme proprietor. Second, the supreme enjoyer. We all want to enjoy. We all want to have the propensity to enjoy. But we need to understand that we are not this body. We are the soul, the spirit soul. Correct? But what we are trying to do, this soul is a part of the Lord. But this body is temporary. And we are trying to enjoy through this body. The permanent, the eternal, is trying to enjoy through this temporary body. That is why it is an incompatible situation. It doesn't work out. So it's a very beautiful example to explain this. You have all seen a fish. Where does a fish live? Yes. Where does a fish live? In the water? Yes? Okay. Suppose I take a fish out of the water. Yeah? I take a fish and say, what is this? Only water? Water is of no use. Let me take the fish out. I put it in a nice golden vessel. Beautiful vessel. Very nice. I put nice golden ornaments on the fish. Yeah? Decorate the fish. Give it lots of money. Yeah? Get the nice, best possible foodstuffs to the fish. Yeah? Will the fish be happy? What will the fish be doing? What will the fish be doing? Yes? Yeah? Be crying. He'll be struggling. Why? What does a fish need? Only water. So whatever anything else one may provide, it will not give him any enjoyment. Similarly, the spirit soul, that is me, that is I, that is we who are there in this body, will not get any enjoyment from whatever we provide otherwise. Why? Because the position of the soul is to serve the Supreme Lord. Because that is a position. It cannot be satisfied by anything else. So that is the reason the Lord is saying, I am the supreme enjoyer. And what we are trying is to enjoy separately. Actually, there was a beautiful drama supposed to be staged, which they were unable to do at the last minute. That is a story of how once all the senses in the body, you know, the hand, the legs, the eyes, everybody went on a strike. The hand was saying, why should I do all the hard work? I collect food, I put it in the mouth, I will stop working. Because after all, everything that I do, it's only the stomach who's eating it. So why should I work? I'll not do any work from today. So he goes on strike. The legs say, why should I work? I walk. All the way. Yeah, and then that's how food comes. So I stop. I go on strike. The eyes say, why should I work? And they're just feeding this lazy stomach, which is just there, not doing anything. So I say, why? I'm searching for food. I get it. And feeding the stomach. And what is the use? Let me go on strike. So they all go on strike. None of the senses work. So what happens? There is no food in the stomach. Automatically, none of the parts are nourished. All of them become weak. Yeah? All of them are collapsing. Correct? Why? Because all of them get nourishment from that stomach. Can the hand only eat? Can you give foodstuff to the legs? No. Similarly, we, the spirit soul, are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Only when we give enjoyment to that whole, then all of us will be satisfied. We can't expect that I will separately enjoy. Yes? And why is the Lord the supreme enjoyer? If one is an enjoyer, he should never be under stress of anything. Correct? If one is enjoying, he should never be stressed with anything. Right? And we saw that he's also the complete proprietor. He's the controller of everything. Yes, the first thing we discussed was he's a proprietor. Now just take an ordinary example that if someone just owns a small little company, it's owner of a small factory, yeah? And he has so much stress, so much tension, he has to run here, he has to run there, he has to get things done, yeah? There's so much of stress. But here is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists. Does the Lord sit and bother, oh, is that planet running okay? Yeah, is there rain on this planet? Yeah? Is there enough sunshine there? Is that universe running okay? Does he do that? No. You saw the Lord. He's just playing on his flute. Enjoying. Blissfully. Yeah? It's not that he's pulling his hair and, so what do I do? Stress. No. The Lord is a supreme enjoyer. Everything is running by his control. And what is the third point of the formula? Yes? He is a well-wishing friend of all living entities. It's a very clear thing. He says of all living entities. He doesn't say only people who are my devotees. Yeah, no. He's providing for everyone. Does he discriminate that these people are atheists? I will not provide for them. Yeah? These people are blaspheming me. People say he doesn't exist. Does that mean the Lord cuts off? No. Suhridam sarva bhutanam. He is a well-wishing friend of all living entities. Huh? And without asking for anything in return. Yes? We have discussed this example earlier also. You all pay the electricity bill. Correct? You all pay the water bill. But what is the most important thing that is required to exist? Yes? Without which you cannot survive even for a few minutes. Air. Right? Air. Everyone agrees? Yes. And have any of you paid any air bill? Is anyone paying any air bill? Yeah? And the Lord is just supplying. And how many gallons of liters of air have we consumed? But are we doing anything? Are we returning back? And if the Lord had to turn back and say, oh, give me the bill or I'll cut off. No. The Lord is a supreme well-wishing friend, irrespective. Whoever it is, it's just supplying. Yeah? Unless someone is a real well-wisher, he cannot just supply. You may give to someone who likes you. But someone who is blaspheming you, someone who is telling you that you don't exist, would you provide? No. The Lord is doing that since time immemorial. Another thing Srila Prabhupada explains is that when we make plans, the government makes plans, saying for providing for people, always explains, okay, human beings, it always only counts human beings, right? Humans in this. Every country thinks of only its humans. People here, people there. Do they count the trees and the plants and the animals? How they will get food? No. But who supplies to all of them? Are we providing? Do you keep every day for the ants, for the insects, or for the flies in my house? Do we? Who is supplying the elephant in the forest of Africa? Tons of food. Who is doing that? Are we doing it? No. Who is providing? Who is providing for the tree on top of a mountain? A lone tree on top of the mountain. You've seen that? So many times. There are huge hills. There's a lone tree on top. Who is doing that? For all species. For all living entities. Yes? So that is the Lord. He's a supreme well-wishing friend of all living entities. Yeah? And another important thing is, who is a person who is closest to us? Right now, all of you are sitting. Who is a person who is closest to you right now? You may say, the girl who is sitting next to me. But that again we said, we are not this body. You are talking of the person sitting next to you is the person sitting next to your body. But we are who? Who are we? Who are we? Yes, spirit soul. So who is that person sitting closest to us? That is the Supreme Lord. We have friends, they're there for some time, and then they go away. But who's a real friend? A friend in need is a friend indeed. Yes, we've all heard of this? Yes. So that is the Lord. Whether we are humans, whether we have taken this body, or we have taken an animal body, or we have taken a mosquito's body, everywhere the soul goes, the Supreme Lord is accompanying that soul. Wherever we have gone, whichever body we have taken, he has been the one who has never left us. Huh? Can you have a friend like that? You don't even look at that person. And that person just steadily follows you. Not for a few months, not for a few years. Life after life after life. Yes? So that is why the Lord is the supreme well-wishing friend of all living entities. So this is a solution for real peace. When we understand these three things, then actually the Lord is a controller and a proprietor, the Lord is a supreme enjoyer, and the Lord is a supreme well-wishing friend of all living entities. So what do we do when we understand this? How does a person live after that? How do we live our lives after we understand this truth? So we need to understand that the fundamental need of the soul is to love and to be loved. But till now, without this knowledge, we've been trying to focus our love on so many other things, considering them to be the reality. But now, when we understand from the manual, that is like turning the knobs. That's what we've been doing all this time, turning this knob, turning that knob. But now when we understand that it is the Lord who is actually the supreme well-wishing friend, and it is in Him that we should be reposing our love, that is where we should redirect. So once we understand this, we should understand that it is the Lord that I have to repose my love. And how can you show your love? He's a supreme controller, we are saying. So how can we show our love to the Lord? It's such a huge thing. So how do we show our love? So it's a very nice statement which His Holiness Niranjan Maharaj has quoted. It's like the fullest expression of our love for the Lord, for Krishna, is when we chant the holy names. You want to express your love for someone, you wonder how I can express my love, no? So the fullest expression of our love for the Lord is when we chant the holy names. We're all chanting when the program started. That is just an expression of our love for the Lord. So this is the process, that when we understand this, then we can be in real peace. And unless we have real peace, we cannot share it with the world. We cannot share something which we don't have. Yes? Can you give others what you don't have? No? So first we should cultivate this within our own hearts. And then we can share it. And the drama that was depicting was showing that what happens when a person understands this. What happened to Mrigari? Yes? What happened to Mrigari, the hunter? Yeah? Tell me. Can you speak loudly? Yes? Sorry? Mrigari the hunter was a very, very cruel person. He was not at all peaceful. Do any of you feel that he was a peaceful man? No, he was so cruel. He was killing them half, not even fully killing them. He was half killing them. Seeing those animals being tortured, that was his pleasure. But what happened when he refocused his love to the Lord? When he understood the peace formula, what happened? He was not even ready to kill an ant. Not even ready to hurt an ant. That is the power of achieving real peace. We don't want just, some cheap thing called as peace. We want real peace. Yeah, you always look out, no? When you are going out, you always want genuine. The real thing. Yes? Everyone, we have the real thing. Correct? So here, the manual is saying, Bhagavad Gita is saying, this is real peace. Yes? So, Srila Prabhupada has given this real peace to all of us. So, when we take this in our own lives, we will be peaceful and then we can give it to others. Then there will not be any question of crime. Forget about crime. No living entity will try to cause harm to another. Isn't that a world which will be absolutely peaceful? Yes? If everyone was like Mrigari. Yes? Do you agree? If everyone was like Mrigari, doesn't want to hurt anyone, then what a wonderful world it would be. So Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Chicago was a city of total crime. The crime list was very high. So the police chief came to meet Srila Prabhupada. That, Swamiji, I heard that you have something to make our city. The crime rate come down. So Prabhupada gave this simple thing. So just chant. Yeah. Get all the people, just chant and prasad. Yeah. Automatically everything, all your problems will be solved. Yes? So, we would like to summarize at the end now. Thank you so much for your kind attention. But even if you don't remember anything of this whole presentation, it is fine, acceptable. The only thing that I humbly request all of us who are there in this room to remember at the end of this presentation is these three things. What is the peace formula? That the Lord is a supreme proprietor and controller. The Lord is a supreme enjoyer. And the Lord is a supreme well-wishing friend of all living entities. Only this and nothing else can give us real peace. And how do we do that? By reposing our love to the Supreme Lord. And how can we repose our love? How can we express our love? How can we express our love? By chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you so much. And what I attempted to speak is just a small molecule of what Srila Prabhupada has repeated and given from all the previous acharyas and what I've heard from all the devotees. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Any questions, please feel free to ask.
None? Okay, there's good news. She's a vegetarian. She won't eat you up. You can ask questions. No one?
Please feel free to ask questions. If you have any.
Thank you for such wonderful presentation. Now you summarize at the end that it is just by expressing our love for the Lord, by chanting the holy name, we'll achieve this peace. But all over the world, especially in our town in Bombay, we see so many people who are trying to give us peace. So many ways, no? People say, do this kind of meditation, live your life this way, then you will achieve peace. And there are so many other people who are following them and they try to tell you. And then so many people are advertising that this kind of yoga, that kind of yoga. And that's for peace. And people do achieve some peace. So what is that? And how it is different from the formula you are telling us?
Yes. There are many organizations who everyone claims that they're going to have peace. But what we spoke about is, right from the beginning, is that we are talking of one, real peace, not some peace, yeah, not some little temporary, you know, freedom from something which is tormenting us. We're talking of real peace which doesn't end, which doesn't cease, which is not limited to the, you know, time, space or anything, right? And second thing is, yes, many people may have many versions of how they can achieve peace. But when we have to follow something, we need to check out what is the authority. Right as we said, that what is our authority? What are we trying to find out from? We don't want to move this knob and see and that knob and see on the television. We want to see from the person who has created it. Correct? Like if I have a Sony television, and I say that in the Panasonic TV, if you have to clear some disturbance, then they say you turn this knob. Will it apply? No, my make is different. My manual is different. The person who created it is different. So we need to follow what is given for that television. Correct? So before we follow, it's not that we're saying this is wrong or that is right, but we are saying that in our own lives, we want to follow the exact manual so that we run the instrument properly. So what we are following is the relevant manual for this age, for this instrument, that is this world, that is the Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is a manual, and the Bhagavad Gita manual is saying that this is the peace formula. So I accept to follow it. And that is what is promising me real peace. So I accept to follow it. Because I don't want something which will give me some temporary freedom. And I do not want to turn out any knobs. I want to have an absolute guaranteed answer for peace. So the Bhagavad Gita stands. Bhagavad Gita is relevant up to the extent that even people who are not believers in the Bhagavad Gita, in the court, they say, I will speak the truth on the basis of Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is not some science which we have invented right now. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita is always there. So the manual we are following is a manual written by the Creator. And the Creator is saying, this is what is required to give you peace. So why should I consult any other manual of any other TV? Yes? Does that answer your question? Thank you. So just as we had this program of Chetna, the young girls, so we have, this is a place where you will get knowledge for understanding what is actually beneficial for us. There are so many universities that you have which will give you knowledge about your body. But today what we have understood is that we are the spirit soul, correct? So if we have to fulfill the needs of the soul, so we need to go to a place where the food for the soul is given. So where you all have visited today is a place where you get food for the soul. And also food for the body, the prasadam, but that will also satisfy your soul. Yes, so we have regular programs on Sundays, the Sunday festival programs. Every month there is a Chetna program for the young girls. So we'll announce the date for the next Chetna.
Not been decided yet, but please keep in touch with us and we'll let you know.
Yeah.
We have Kirtan now for about half an hour, and after that you can join us for dinner.